The entertainment industry will be watching closely on Wednesday as a trial gets underway in Delaware. Shareholders in the Walt Disney Company are suing a group of current and former board members over the expensive hiring and firing of former Disney president Michael Ovitz. Here's NPR's Kim Masters.
In this trial, two members of the dying mogul class, Disney chief executive Michael Eisner and former Uber agent Michael Ovitz, will presumably be dragged to the witness stand and asked a lot of embarrassing questions. For Hollywood insiders, this spectacle is the kind of early Christmas present that they normally wouldn't dare to dream about. It all started in 1995, when Michael Eisner surprised the industry by hiring his friend Michael Ovitz as the number two man at Disney. Ovitz had been routinely described as the most powerful man in Hollywood. As founder of an agency that represented the biggest stars in the business, Ovitz had never hesitated to flex his muscle. And as Eisner related in a 1996 interview on The Larry King Show, Ovitz made his share of enemies.
You know, Michael was the top agent in the world for 20 years. And if you are representing Tom Cruise and you're angry at Tom Cruise for what you pay him, what you do is you take it out on Michael.
Ovitz may have been powerful, but he had no corporate experience. Here's Ovitz, also talking to Larry King, after a year on the job.
I can't expect to learn that company in a month, 2 months, 6 months, or a year. Frankly, when we first talked about this, we talked about a two-year learning curve. So I must say, having been here just about a year now, I probably know about 1% of what I need to know.
But Ovitz thought that his best friend, Eisner, would help him learn.
We've been friends for over 25 years. Our families are friends. Working together in the initial inception was made easier by the fact that we knew each other and probably more difficult by the fact that I had to learn the business.
But now, Ovitz says he was never given a chance. Even before he started his job, top Disney officers refused to report to him. Eisner did nothing to support his friend, and very quickly, the industry buzzed with reports that the Eisner-Ovitz marriage was on the rocks. It seemed to Eisner that Ovitz had no idea how to behave in his new role. He undertook a lavish renovation of his new offices and was said to be running afoul of the company's rules on expenses. But in that Larry King interview in 1996, both men denied that there was a problem. This is Michael Eisner.
It's just all baloney. The fact of the matter is, we together have almost as many enemies as Saddam Hussein, and so it's very difficult not to have this kind of gossip.
Ovitz was fired just a few weeks after that. He had been on the job only 14 months, but he walked away with a payout valued at $140 million. And that expensive hiring and firing is the basis for the shareholders' lawsuit. Janet Sprintz has covered the case for the trade paper Variety. She says the shareholders allege that the board dozed throughout the process, barely discussing the contract when Ovitz was hired.
They never saw a final draft of the contract. They never hired a compensation expert. They seemed to be unaware that the number of stock options granted to Ovitz were far in excess of what you would expect with this kind of contract.
As a stack of papers filed in the case has revealed in embarrassing detail, Eisner was desperate to get rid of Ovitz almost from the beginning. But the suit alleges that when it became clear that Ovitz had to go, the board stood by as Eisner worked out what was meant to be an exit strategy for Ovitz that would save face for both men.
The implication is he was only concerned about not being embarrassed and sort of getting out of this mess as easily as possible, and really didn't look into how he could do it in a way that would be the least cost to Disney.
The defendants in the suit are current and former Disney board members, including Eisner as well as Roy Disney and Stanley Gold, who have bitterly split with Eisner but must lock arms with him in this case. The group maintains that the board will prove in court that it did its job and paid Ovitz only what was mandated by contract. The case is being tried in Delaware, a state that has a favorable legal climate for corporations. But in this case, the state court hasn't been nearly as hospitable as the Disney defendants might wish.
This is truly a landmark piece of litigation, however this comes out.
Lawrence Hammermesh is a professor of corporate law at Widener University in Delaware. He says it's almost impossible to get a court to second-guess decisions made by a board of directors. Delaware law says directors can't be held liable even for grossly negligent conduct.
It's only if you do nothing in circumstances in which any reasonable person would be aware that the wolf is in the sheepfold that you're going to be held personally liable. It's only when you have conscious or reckless indifference to what are plain risks to the company that you ought to be liable. And it is a very tough standard to meet.
That standard makes a case like this one highly unusual.
You just don't see cases like this. Intelligent lawyers representing plaintiffs who are compensated on the basis of a share of any judgment awarded are not going to spend their valuable time and effort pursuing cases that are largely impossible.
But in this case, Hammermesh says, a Delaware court has already issued a stunning ruling that if the facts are as the plaintiffs allege, that might be bad enough to make the board members pay. That would be extraordinary. But if the court finds that the board's behavior at Disney was so exceptionally awful, does the case really set a precedent? Hammermesh says some people think this lawsuit shows the Delaware courts are ready to crack down on boards in the wake of Enron and other scandals.
If the case comes out in a way that holds these directors personally liable, there will be a lot of people running to the phones, running to talk to reporters, and telling them the end is near, the sky is falling, the directors are no longer safe in their homes.
But Hammermesh says that kind of rhetoric would be overheated. As long as board members make a reasonable effort, he says, they're off the hook.
But what this case would do if it came out in favor of the plaintiffs, despite all of what I just said, is concentrate the attention of directors and their advisors to make sure that this kind of set of facts, to the extent it's in their power, never happens again.
And that might be a happy ending to a rather sorrowful tale. Kim Masters, NPR News, Los Angeles.